Welcome to this week's episode of Talk of the Rock. I'm your host, Jared Griffin. With the start of the next legislative session, just 3 weeks away, there's still a lot in the air. And then, of course, with the release of Governor Dunleavy's budget, work has already begun on the legislature's response. So to help us talk about the upcoming legislative session are Kodiak Senator Gary Stevens and Kodiak Representative Louis Stutes. And joining me in the studio to co-host our legislature preview is KMXT News Director Kirsten Dobrah. So welcome, Kirsten, and why don't you start us off?
Whenever you two are here, there's always lots to catch up on. But a good place to start, as Jared mentioned, is that the governor has released his proposed budget, $7.3 billion for the next fiscal year. There's, of course, about a third of that is going to permanent fund dividend payments. There's cuts to the capital budget, no huge cuts to ongoing services. But based on what you've seen, and I can start with you, Senator Stevens, what are some of your reactions to that? Are there any parts of the budget that you're seeing that are workable or that need some work?
Well, you know, the budget is an odd thing. It really is a product of the legislature. The governor doesn't create the budget. We actually do. So the job of the governor is to present a plan, and he did that. He did a good job. It's a beginning. It's where we're going to start from. There are some big problems in it, you know, some big issues that I think need to be addressed. And I know Louise and we talked about some of these, but I think we need to better fund K-12 education. I think we need to try to address the retirement system. I think we need to work on the permanent fund dividend. You know, the governor ran on a high dividend, a $3,000 or so dividend, and that's in his budget. But we know with oil down and actually with the problems the permanent fund has had itself that that's going to be a problem. It's going to be hard to do that. So we're going to have to find a way to address all of those issues. They're going to cost more money than I mentioned, energy as well. And how do we make sure that the Marine Highway is well funded? So how do we do all that within the confines of the money we've got? You know, we have to balance our budget every year. We can't do what the feds do and print money. So I think the reality is that I've talked to the governor a couple of times, met with him in his office in Anchorage, and talked to him on the phone several times. And I really think we've turned a new page, a new leaf with this governor. I think we can work with him. He says that he wants to work with us. He wants to make sure that we find solutions to things, that he wants to cooperate. He's going to be in Juneau more. He's going to interact with us more, which is really, really crucial. And so I'm looking forward to not only, you know, working with Louise in the House, which we've always been able to do, but also this year, maybe we've really turned a corner and we can work with the governor and find an honest resolution to the permanent fund dividend and the other issues that I mentioned as well.
And Representative Stutes, what were some of your reactions and takeaways from the governor's proposed budget?
excuse me. Not trying to sound redundant, but I would have to parrot a lot of what the good senator has said. I as well have had a conversation with the governor and his staff, and I am sensing the same thing, that the governor recognizes to accomplish the goals for Alaskans, we are all going to have to work together, and I see a lot more flexibility in him doing that than has been there in the past. So I'm very hopeful, and as we all know, you know, the House is not organized yet. But interestingly enough, Senator Stevens mentioned some of their priorities, educational funding and retirement benefits for public employees, because anybody that has their eyes open can see that we're losing our public employees, whether it be teachers, firemen, policemen, by the dozen, by the hundreds almost, because of their retirement. And it's interesting, in the conversations I've had with all of the House members, regardless of their party affiliation, those are their priorities as well. So I feel very encouraged. And again, like Senator Stevens said, it's a work in progress. And I think that the governor's laid out some good parameters, and we'll have to do our tweaking as we usually do.
And kind of with that tweaking too, one of the things in the budget, I think, as I mentioned, was the governor has outlined a pretty sizable cut to the state's capital budget. How much is the legislature receptive to that, maybe looking at all this federal infrastructure money that's still out there to pay for different construction and projects for different municipalities?
I think that that's going to be part of the equation. You know, I think that part of those cuts might be directly related to funds that the state has to match in order to receive the federal dollars. And that's, of course, what I zeroed in on first and foremost. And I've already talked to our Senate Finance Committee chair and the House as well, because I noticed that the $30 million for the Alaska Marine Highway UGF funds were not in the budget. And that allows us to leverage about $150 million federal dollars that go directly to the Marine Highway system. So, of course, that's a concern. But I think it's a big puzzle, and all these pieces are going to play in together on the capital budget. And the decrease from state funding, but the increase in funding for federal match dollars.
I think Louise is actually absolutely correct there. You know, we've got to take advantage of every dollar the federal government can send to us. That means we have to match a lot of things. Beyond that, it's going to be hard to have a large capital budget that doesn't include federal funds. You know, I think it'll probably be limited again this year. It's really a shame because there are a lot of issues out there like harbors and, that we need to address. You know, it's a big problem. But it's going to be hard to do it this year with limited funds.
Let's dig into education. What are you looking at? With the starting point seems to be no forward funding, no increase to the student base allocation, the SBA, and an overall 5% decrease to the education budget. And then on top of that, also a 5% reduction of the University of Alaska also. Where do you go from there?
Well, we know we can't continue on that road. You know, we have reduced education in effect, even though we keep it at level funding. Just the cost of doing business, the cost of fuel, the cost of heating, the cost of teachers, it's mm-hmm. all gone up. And so the effect on education has been a tightening and a decrease. You know, so as I was campaigning, and I know Louise heard the same thing, people would say, well, listen, we pay more money per student than any state in the United States, but yet we're not doing as well as most states. And, you know, that's true. But when you look at the other figures that shows the cost of living in Alaska is so much higher, so much more difficult to find housing, to find teachers, to bring people up here. It just costs a lot more to provide education in Alaska. So when you look at those figures, we're about in the middle of the crowd. We're somewhere down in the middle of how much we spend per student compared to the cost of living. So to me, education has really been crucial. We've got to address that. We've got to look at the per student amount. And the university, of course, I'm really concerned about the university. We have reduced that in the past. You know, the only way to grow Alaska is to bring the university in to help us create jobs for people. And you know, we need more Alaskan teachers. We need more Alaskan nurses. We need to educate our Alaskan kids so they stay in Alaska and they get the education they need.
Of course, one of the big concerns for me, not only is the per student allocation, the BSA, but the retirement benefits. And again, it's not just teachers, it's public employees, because I think that's critical. And I spoke specifically to the governor about that. And what's nice is he recognizes that. And he recognizes that we have to do something in order to keep our good people here. So again, I go back to saying, it's a puzzle, we'll get it put together. But when you have the legislature that's pretty much all on the same page, I think that the administration is going to be a lot more pliable and a lot more willing to work with us.
So what kind of solutions are the legislature looking at for PERS and TERS? How much of a priority is generating like a new tier?
Well, I think that that's kind of what they're looking at. And I think they're also looking at a little more participation from the individuals and a little less participation from the state. Everybody will participate, but that's what got us into trouble initially mm-hmm. was the huge obligation that the state took on. Mm-hmm. And from what I can tell and in the conversations I've had, the people are willing. You know, the public employees are willing to participate in their own retirement, but they want defined benefits.
We have to address that, and I think, you know, we can do that. We've had several bills over the years we've looked at. We're getting closer to the point that it might actually work. I think what Louise is really saying is that we have to acknowledge that medical benefits particularly will not be what they have been in the past. That's going to have to be a major issue to address. But we've got to find a way to keep people in Alaska to hire teachers and to retain them, and that's been the problem. We've got to address that. I think actually the latest plan we looked at was a slight savings in retirement. So if that's true, that looks really good to me.
And the good news is everybody's willing to come to the table and talk about it, and that's what it takes. You know, it's got to be a little give and take on everybody's part, and I see that coming. So that's really good news.
Turning to fisheries, which always have to talk about, Representative Stutes, you had a hand in appointing members to the Bycatch Review Task Force.
I did, and I'm proud of it.
Yeah, and they just released its first end of last year it was formed. It just released its first series of recommendations. Have you had a chance to look at their final report, and what are some of your takeaways?
I have not had a chance to really review it thoroughly. I do know that they are suggesting that this committee stay intact, which I think is incredible because it gives people an outlet. When a concern comes up, you're not talking after the fact. You have a place to go and say, hey. And again, I was really impressed with the ability of all the different sectors to come together and compromise and recognize this sector needs this, this sector needs this. I'm really impressed, and I'm very happy because I think it's going to really give us some guidance. And it also, having the active participants on this committee, people that are involved in the fisheries, is a huge help to the Department of Fish and Game.
So you see the future of this task force hopefully continuing.
Yes, I do. And I'm going to politic heavily for that.
And it's got to be based on science, on what the scientists tell us. And I think what they're telling us through that that report is that there's more than one cause. You can't just simply say, okay, it's the pollock fishermen. They catch all this bycatch, and that's what's destroying the salmon runs in some of the rivers. And actually, the scientists say, well, that's really not true. And I was surprised when I read some of the reports that the commissioner of Fish and Game said actually that 90% of the chum salmon caught by the pollock fishermen is from Asia. It's from Asian hatcheries. It's not American. It's not American fish. So,
and in also, in relation to this task force, it's really been helpful to the commissioner, Commissioner Vincent Lang, and this has allowed him a lot more scientific information, if you will. So I feel really, really positive. And another outcome is the fact that the governor is recognizing now how important our fisheries are to our state, and in his budget, he has been a lot more generous in making sure that the Department of Fish and Game is funded than he has been in the past.
Representative Suits, I also can't let you out of here without asking a fairies question. As always, do you have any updates for us on the replacement vessel for the Testamina?
Well, as a matter of fact, I have a meeting with our good senator and the co-chair of Senate Finance and the head of the AMHOB board meeting on Monday to address these very things, because there's been a turnover in personnel in Ketchikan, and that's going to affect it. And let me just suffice it to say, trust me, I'm keeping my thumb on it.
Let's talk about organization. So everybody's favorite. The Senate has reached a pretty historic supermajority coalition there. And Senator Stevens, you said that, and I hope I'm paraphrasing this accurately, that one of the reasons or one of the intentions behind the organization was to avoid deep contentious issues and focus on ones that you can actually win.
Well, that's true. We are organized, and I should say I've been in the House in the past. My first 2 years were in the House. So I realized the problems that you have in a House when you've got 40 members. So it's just amazing how much simpler it is with only 20 members. So we have organized, and it's a bipartisan coalition. It's Democrats and Republicans. And, what we've really decided is to not deal with the far left and the far right issues, not deal with even the political parties' issues, but really try to find solutions that work for Alaska. So we've come with a great organization where we really have balanced it between Democrats and Republicans. I mean, I don't know if you want to hear all the details, but we've, in leadership, for example, we've got 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans in the chairman and vice chairman or co-chairman of our committees. We have 19 of those, and 10 of them are Democrats, 9 are Republicans. And then, of course, in the Finance Committee, we have 4 Republicans and 3 Democrats. So it really could not be more balanced. We did the best we could to make sure that both parties are represented. And so that does mean that we have 3 members, far-right members, who are in the minority. What we found is that we simply could not work with them in the past. They would never vote for the budget. They would never work with us. And we, in fact, this is really representation, this organization, of what we've been living with for the last 2 Senate presidents, you know, where the only way to get a budget passed was to depend on the Democrats. So we've done that. Neither party is going to control the Senate. It takes 11 members to do anything. The most we have is 9 Democrats, 8 Republicans. So I think it's very balanced. It's going to work well. I was president of the Senate and when we did that before, and it's a good way to approach legislation. And look forward to seeing how the House organizes so that we can work with them.
Yeah, the House is, I guess, a couple of obstacles that haven't been in there in the past. There was the David Eastman lawsuit, but I think that one's been settled. And then the Jenny Armstrong lawsuit was just, I think they just completed their closing arguments yesterday or today. So that one's still up in the air. But I know you can't really predict so much with the House, but...
I cannot predict, but... I can tell you this. We have a very, very active freshman group. Mm-hmm. And they've been very instrumental. The House, like the Senate, has been split. And it has been purely politically driven, party-wise. And so who's the loser? Alaskans, when that happens. And the conversations that we're having, as I said earlier, we hopefully will not be organizing around the parties. We will be organizing around common thread issues. And that's what's exciting, because with all the conversations we've had, regardless of what your party affiliation is, we have come to the conclusion that our common thread issues are the same common thread issues that the Senate has, which really makes it a lot more workable of a situation. I think that there's a lot of trepidation because particularly one of the parties is very aggressive. If you don't adhere strictly to their party and their constitution of the party, and I think that there are members and freshman members and actually senior members in that party that are concerned that the party may come after them. But the bottom line is our job is to work for Alaskans, not for the party. And so we're hoping to do just as the Senate did, whether it comes to fruition or not, I don't know, but to coalesce around issues rather than parties and come together. And so that's what our hope is. And the other hope is that we're ready to go on January 17th. Mm-hmm.
The Fairbanks Newsminder did a great article on exactly the problem that Louise is addressing. If I could quote them, they said, "The problem is when you fall so in line with a party that you forget why you are there, which is to serve Alaska, not the party line." That's exactly what Louise right. and I have, the way we have worked in the last dozen years here, is to make sure that we're doing what's right for Alaska. That's a crucial thing.
Right, and that's what prompted me initially to join a coalition, was because the party that I'm affiliated with didn't support the Alaska Marine Highway System, and it didn't support the fisheries the way we need it to be supported in order to be a sustainable community. And so my response was, my obligation is not to you, my party members. My obligation is to the people that walk into the booth and press the button for me.
I think you kind of answered my follow-up, which was, you know, to what extent is this move towards bipartisan coalitions in the House and the Senate a response to a reflection of, you know, the Alaska GOP in general and the clashes of policy and ideologies that seems to be creating more friction in the Alaska GOP than the Democratic Party?
Well, this is interesting. last year, towards the end of the year, my first year, I was the speaker for 2 years. And my first year before I went in as speaker, we had a retreat with our members, and we had a facilitator from one of the national organizations, political organizations that's bipartisan, come. And at the end of my second year, I had that individual and a professor from Duke University call me because they are doing a white paper and a study on the Alaska House Coalition, because we were the only bipartisan coalition in the United States. And he said what was even more incredible, having been at the retreat, you guys accomplished everything you set out to accomplish. We got out on time. We had a sustainable, reasonable PFD. We didn't overdraw the POMV. Those were our criteria, and that's what were driven. It wasn't party related at all. And he said to me, you guys have done what every legislator in the United States is trying to do, and we're trying to figure out how you did it. And I think, you know, the senator said it earlier too. You stay away from issues that divide you, and you look for the issues that bring you together and protect Alaskans. And that's what we did.
So you know, I think Louise and I are both in the same boat here. I have always been a Republican. I always will be a Republican.
Right.
I like the principles of the Reagan Republican Party. I'm not going to change that at all. But our party in Alaska has been taken over by the far right. I mean, I don't think anybody could argue with that. And to the point that there are four senators who were elected that the party endorsed their opponents, and myself included. The party did not endorse me. I was the incumbent, and I did not have the party endorsement. But yet I won, and four of us won, and of course Lisa Murkowski also won her Senate seat, U.S. Senate seat. So, you know, I think the party has to come back to the middle, back to where most of us are. Are they going to start losing folks? The parties are important. Things did change this year with the new voting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you want to speak about that later, but we'll find, you know, that things did change without having a Republican Party primary. That made a big difference. And so, you know, it's surprising when you think you've been a Republican all your life, but the party supports your opponent. That's an odd place for me to be, and I'm sure for Louise as well.
Jump in here. I don't know, Kirsten, you had a question about ranked choice voting, but if you brought it up, I mean, did that change your campaigns this year? I mean, I think it resulted in there's a lot of turnover in the House, for sure.
Certainly.
But even going forward,
I think it, to me, everybody that doesn't like it, they're afraid of change. That's one of the issues I see. Change is difficult. Look, I'm not a spring chicken either, and change is tough for me too. But it's just a fact of life. And what, as I view it, it has taken some of the power away from the parties and given it back to the people. That's where it belongs. It belongs with the people. It might be confusing the first time or two, and I know that I personally was very active in trying to educate folks. And now that they've experienced it, they may understand it. If they don't, I think that they will be more apt to say, I got to figure out how this works. But I think it takes the power back to the people.
Well, I didn't actually vote for ranked choice voting in the election. I thought it was a pretty bizarre idea, and no other state had, I guess Maine had done that, but not many other states. A few cities had ranked choice voting, but I wasn't sure that it was going to work. But honestly, I think after all is said and done, it worked very well. I know there's a lot of opposition to it, but that's from people who lost, you know. I've had several people call me and say, so now is the legislature going to throw out ranked choice voting? Well, the issue there is that this entire legislature was elected through the ranked choice voting. Do you really think that we're going to do that? Maybe there'll be an attempt by the public to make that change. We can change the law after 2 years have passed, but I don't see any big movement within the legislature at this point to do away with ranked choice voting. I think it's been reasonably successful.
Okay, let's talk about your personal legislation. You were pretty successful last year. Governor Dunleavy came down and signed SB 20. That was Senator Stevens' bill to help cut some of the red tape for teachers coming up here from the lower 48. And then also HB 308, which was about funding a position to do research into or to support for Alzheimer's and dementia. So pretty successful year last year. Reflecting back on that, and what are your personal legislative goals for this year?
Well, as a Senate president, it's pretty hard to run much legislation, and the best thing you can do is to make sure a few bills that I had didn't get through the system to farm them out to someone else who's interested in it. The only one I promise you I will do again is the vaping bill. You know, it would save lives, you know, and it's really an enormous problem in this country right now with the number of young people who are vaping, and certainly the Heart Association, the Lung Association, are all in favor of us doing something to change that. Now, it passed the House, it passed the Senate, and it went to the governor's desk, and he vetoed it because it was, in fact, a tax bill. It added a tax to purchase of vaping material. So that's one that I am going to do myself. Again, and I think hopefully try to get it done in the next in the first year. But as to the other bills that I have been running, I'm going to try and have someone else handle it, because as Senate President, you people think that, well, I'm going to take a whack at the president or the speaker here, and we'll never pass this bill. So it's best to put it in someone else's hands for the most part.
Right. Well, and insofar as I'm concerned, you know, you're going to see my bills that didn't get through. One of them is the duplication of fees for your CFEC permit fishing. You know, you shouldn't have to go to DMV if you have a CFEC permit. And if anybody's gotten any kind of citation for not having a DMV sticker when they have a CFEC, get a hold of my office, because we can help you out there. You know, and then of course there's a conflict of interest bill, which has been going through the Senate or the legislature for 14 years, and we have a certain group of sport fishermen that think that it's going to make an uneven playing field for them, and that's just not the case. It's just simply says you can participate in the conversation, you just can't vote if you have a conflict. And because why would you be on the Board of Fish and have an area of expertise and not be able to share it? So and another one that we're looking at very seriously, because we've had several requests for it, both from Kodiak and now from Seward, which is our new district, is a nursing compact. Mm-hmm. So when the nurses come up from down below, they can go to work here. There's a real crisis in the state of Alaska, and if we can join the compact that already exists, that will alleviate a lot of those issues. And so we're anticipating some legislation in that direction as well.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of support for that, for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you to our guests this week, Representative Stutes and Senator Stevens. Thank you for a great conversation about what we're going to be looking forward to over the next 3, 4, or 5, hopefully not 6 months.
Amen.
And thanks for listening to Talk of the Rock. And thanks to our co-host, Kirsten Dobroth. Thanks for coming in.
As always, great to be here.
Thanks for listening.